2014. The new show schedules are from 5 to 6 a.m. Walden's Pond, from 6 to 8 a.m. High Praise, from 8 to 9 a.m. Special, 9 to 11 a.m. Here of a Sunday Morning, 11 a.m. to 12 noon, The Next Hour, noon to 3 p.m. Through the Opera Glass, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Constable Latino will alternate with New World Gallery every other Sunday. That will be the new schedule effective Sunday, July the 6th, 2014. We want to thank all of our listeners for supporting WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the Buddy System. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org. Buddy. Make a difference.
The WBAI Local Station Board will meet on Wednesday, July 9th, 2014 at 7 p.m. at the Theater for the New City on the first floor in the Community Space Room at 155 First Avenue between East 9th and East 10th Streets in the East Village section of Manhattan. The public is invited to attend. Thanks.
No, Reggie, thank you. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. It is midnight, and we present in the spirit of Robert Knight and with the spirit of Robert Knight this special edition of Earthwatch with Robert Knight. Coming up in 90 minutes, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. So stay tuned to WBAI New York.
This special broadcast of Earthwatch, one of the best examples of the art of radio, focuses on nuclear power and electoral politics, opens with a poem on the potential calamity of nuclear war, and features the voices of Barack Obama, Martin Luther King Jr., and Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report. It's followed by a listener discussion. The program is interspersed with musical commentary to be considered part of the message. Produced and hosted by the late Robert Knight.
The devastation you see here was caused by the explosion of the bomb above this zero point. Only the strongest buildings are left standing. And they are gutted. Looking north from zero point, this is what was left. Looking east, the camera records a scene of complete devastation in the immediate area. To the south, these are the ruins. Looking west from zero point, the same complete leveling is evident. The same inability of structures to withstand atomic power.
Plutonian ode. What new element before us, unborn in nature? Is there a new thing under the sun? At last, inquisitive Whitman, a modern epic, detonative. Scientific theme first penned, unmindful by Dr. Seaborg with poisonous hand. Named for Death's planet through the sea beyond Uranus. Whose tholic or father this magma-tiered lord of Hades, sire of avenging furies, billionaire, hell king, worshipped once with black sheep throats cut, priest's face averted from underground mysteries in a single temple at Eleusis, spring green Persephone nuptial to his inevitable shade, Demeter, mother of Asphodel, weeping dew, her daughter stored in salty caverns under white snow, black hail, gray winter rain or polar ice, immemorable seasons before fish flew in heaven, before a ram died by the starry bush, before the bull stamped sky and earth, or twins inscribed their memories in cuneiform clay or crab flood, washed memory from the skull, or lion sniffed the lilac breeze in Eden. Before the great year began turning its 12 signs, air constellations wheeled for 24,000 sunny years slowly round their axis in Sagittarius, 167,000 times returning to this night. Radioactive nemesis, were you there at the beginning? Black, dumb, tongueless, unsmelling blast of disillusion? I manifest your baptismal word after 4 billion years. I guess your birthday in Earthling night. I salute your dreadful presence, lasting, majestic as any god. Sabaoth, Jehovah, Astapheus, Adonais, Elohim, Yao, Yaldabaoth. Eon from eon, born ignorant in an abyss of light. Sophia's reflections, glittering, thoughtful galaxies. Whirlpools of star spume, silver thin as hairs of Einstein. Father Whitman, I celebrate a matter that renders self oblivion. Grand subject that annihilates inky hands and pages prayers. Old orators inspired immortalities. I begin your chant, open mouth, exhaling into spacious sky over silent mills at Hanford, Savannah River, Rocky Flats, Pantex, Burlington, Albuquerque. I yell through Washington, South Carolina, Colorado, Texas, Iowa, New Mexico, where nuclear reactors create a new thing under the sun, where Rockwell war plants fabricate this death stuff trigger in iron baths. Tanger Silas Mason assembles the terrified weapon, secret by 10,000, and where Manzano Mountain boasts to store its dreadful decay through 240 millennia, while our galaxy spirals around its nebulous core, I enter your secret places with my mind. I speak with your presence. I roar your lion roar with mortal mouth. 1 microgram inspired to 1 lung. 10 pounds of heavy metal dust adrift, slow motion over gray Alps, the breadth of the planet. How long before your radiance speeds blight and death to sentient beings? Enter my body or not, I carol my spirit inside you. Unapproachable weight, oh heavy, heavy element awakened. I vocalize your consciousness to 6 worlds. I chant your absolute vanity. Yay, monster of anger birthed in fear. Oh, most ignorant matter ever created, unnatural to earth. Delusion of metal empires. Destroyer of lying scientists. Devourer of covetous generals. Incinerator of armies and melter of wars. Judgment of judgments. Divine wind over vengeful nations. Death scandal of capital politics. Molester of presidents. Ah, civilization stupidly industrious. Canker hexon multitudes, learned or illiterate. Manufactured specter of human reason. Oh, solidified imago of practitioners in the black arts, I dare your reality. I challenge your very being. I publish your cause and effect. I turn the wheel of mind on your 300 tons. Your name enters mankind's ear. I embody your ultimate powers. My oratory advances on your vaunted mystery. This breath dispels your braggart fears. I sing your form at last behind your concrete and iron walls, inside your fortress of rubber and nitrogen baths, concrete silicates, translucent silicon shields, and filtered cabinets and baths of lead oil. My voice resounds through robot glove boxes and ingot cans and echoes in electric vaults inert of atmosphere. I enter with spirit.
out loud into your fuel rod drums underground on soundless thrones and beds of lead. Oh, density! This weightless anthem trumpets transcendent through hidden chambers and breaks through iron doors into the infernal room. Over your dreadful vibration, this measured harmony floats, audible. These jubilant tones are honey and milk and wine sweet water poured on the stone block floor. These syllables are barley groats I scatter on your reactor's core. I call your name with hollow vowels. I psalm your fate close by. My breath near deathless ever at your side to spell your destiny. I set this verse prophetic on your mausoleum walls to seal you up eternally with diamond truth. Oh, doomed plutonium. Bard surveys Plutonian history from midnight lit with mercury vapor street lamps till in dawn's early light he contemplates a tranquil politic spaced out between nations' thought forms, proliferating bureaucratic and horrific armed. Satanic industries projected sudden with $500 billion strength around the world. The same time this text is set in Boulder, Colorado, before Front Range of Rocky Mountains, 12 miles north of Rocky Flats nuclear facility in United States, North America, Western Hemisphere of planet Earth, 6 months and 14 days around our solar system in a spiral galaxy, the local year after dominion of the last god Jehovah, 1978, completed as yellow-hazed dawn clouds brighten east, Denver City white below, blue sky transparent, rising empty, deep, and spacious to a morning star high over the balcony above some autos, sat with wheels to curb, downhill from Flatiron's jagged pine ridge, sunlit mountain meadows slope to rust-red sandstone cliffs above brick townhouse roofs, as sparrows waked whistling through marine streets, summer green-leafed trees. This ode to you, O poets and orators to come. You, Father Whitman, as I join your side. You, Congress and American people. You, present meditators, spiritual friends and teachers. You, O master of the diamond arts, take this wheel of syllables in hand. These vowels and consonants to breath's end. Take this inhalation of black poison to your heart. Breathe out this blessing from your breast on our creation. Forests, cities, oceans, desert, rocky flats and mountains in the 10 directions pacify with this exhalation. Enrich this plutonian ode to explode its empty thunder through earthen thought worlds. Magnetize this howl with heartless compassion. Destroy this mountain of plutonium with ordinary mind and body speech. Thus empower this mind guard spirit gone out, gone out, gone beyond me, into wakened space. So,
Now, in light of the ongoing events in Japan, I want to just take a minute to talk about nuclear power. Right now, America gets about one-fifth of our electricity from nuclear energy. And it's important to recognize that nuclear energy doesn't emit carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So those of us who are concerned about climate change, we've got to recognize that nuclear power, if it's safe, can make a significant contribution to the climate change question. And I'm determined to ensure that it's safe. So in light of what's happened in Japan, I've requested a comprehensive safety review by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to make sure that all of our existing nuclear energy facilities are safe. And we're going to incorporate those conclusions and lessons from Japan in design and the building of the next generation of plants. But we can't simply take it off the table. My administration is leading global discussions towards a new international framework in which all countries who are operating nuclear plants are making sure that they're not spreading dangerous nuclear materials and technology. And so, I forgive you for thinking that maybe there isn't much we can do to rise to this challenge. Maybe some of you are feeling kind of cynical or skeptical about whether we're actually going to solve this problem. But everything I have seen and experienced with your generation convinces me otherwise. I think that precisely because you are coming of age at a time of such rapid and sometimes unsettling change, born into a world with fewer walls, educated in an era of constant information, tempered by war and economic turmoil. Because that's the world in which you're coming of age, I think you believe as deeply as any of our previous generations that America can change and it can change for the better. We need that. We need you to dream big. We need you to summon that same spirit of unbridled optimism and that bold willingness to tackle tough challenges and see those challenges through that led previous generations to rise to greatness, to save a democracy, to touch the moon, to connect the world with our own science and our own imagination. That's what America is capable of. That's what you have to push America to do. And it will be you that pushes it. That history of ours, of meeting challenges, that's your birthright. You understand that there's no problem out there that is not within our power to solve. I don't want to leave this challenge for future presidents. I don't want to leave it for my children. I don't want to leave it for your children. So yes, solving it will take time and it will take effort. It will require our brightest scientists, our most creative companies. It will require all of us, Democrats, Republicans, and everybody in between, to do our part. But with confidence in America and in ourselves and one another, I know this is a challenge that we will solve. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
Oppose the war in Vietnam because I love America. I speak out against this war not in anger, but with anxiety and sorrow in my heart, and above all with a passionate desire to see our beloved country stand as the moral example of the world. I speak out against this war because I'm disappointed with America. And there can be no great disappointment where there is no great love. I'm disappointed with our failure to deal positively and forthrightly with the triple evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism. We are presently moving down a dead-end road that can lead to national disaster. America has strayed to the far country of racism and militarism, the home that all too many Americans left was solidly structured idealistically. Its pillars were soundly grounded in the insights of our Judeo-Christian heritage. All men are made in the image of God. All men are brothers. All men are created equal. Every man is an heir to a legacy of dignity and worth. Every man has rights that are neither conferred by nor derived from the state. They are God-given. Out of one blood, God made all men to dwell upon the face of the earth. What a marvelous foundation for any home. What a glorious and healthy place to inhabit. But America strayed away, and this unnatural excursion has brought only confusion and bewilderment. It has left hearts aching with guilt and minds distorted with irrationality. It is time for all people of conscience to call upon America to come back home. Come home, America. Omar Khayyam is right, the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on. I call on Washington today. I call on every man and woman of goodwill all over America today. I call on the young men of America who must make a choice today. Take a stand on this issue. Tomorrow may be too late. The book may close. And don't let anybody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you are too arrogant. And if you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power, and I'll place it in the hands of a nation that doesn't even know my name. Be still and know that I'm God. Now, it isn't easy to stand up for truth and for justice. Sometimes it means being frustrated. When you tell the truth and take a stand, sometimes it means that you will walk the streets with a burdened heart. Sometimes it means losing a job. It means being abused and scorned. It may mean having a 7 or 8 year old child asking your daddy, why do you have to go to jail so much? I've long since learned that to be a follower of Jesus Christ means taking up the cross. And my Bible tells me that Good Friday comes before Easter. Before the crown we wear, there is the cross that we must bear. Let us bear it. Bear it for truth. Bear it for justice. And bear it for peace.
When they laid him in the tomb. And were you there when they laid his precious body in the tomb? Oh, sometimes it causes me to tremble. Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? But were you there when he rose from the grave? I cry, yeah, and I begin to tremble. I tremble. Were you there when he rose from
still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Heavy is the beating sound for justice that comes. When the world stop and listen. When will we all stop and see? Know that millions of babies still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. The innocent ones still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop and listen? When will we all stop and see? We've been missing. won't let shine. The light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? The light of truth we won't let shine. As long as there's life, there's still a day. As long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight in New York. We're going to have some serious discussion tonight, but I submit for your consideration one of the most brilliant presentations of the recent Left Forum by Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report on Electoral Politics, in which our illusions are so magnificently denuded. So here now, and we'll take your phone calls at 212-209-2900 after we hear this presentation. So please stay tuned. It's going to rock your world. Might even wake you up at this time of the night, day, or morning. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. You're tuned to WBAI. And here now, Glenn Ford, from the just concluded proceedings of the Left Forum here in New York City, about the significance of the rule of Barack Obama.
Good afternoon. Power to the people.
Power to the people.
We all know that the lesser evil being referred to is Barack Obama. That's in some circles, that's his name. I'm voting for the lesser evil. We want to make it very clear that we at Black Agenda Report do not consider Barack Obama to be the lesser evil. We think of him as the more effective evil. He's been more effective in evil doing than Bush in terms of protecting the citadels of corporate power and in advancing the imperial agenda. He has put both Wall Street and U.S. imperial power on new and more aggressive and destructive tracks, just as he hired himself out to do so. That was always Wall Street's expectation of Barack Obama. That was his promise to them. And that's why they gave him far more money back in 2008 than they gave to John McCain. They were buying Obama futures on the elections market. And on that deal, they made out like bandits. They invested in Obama to protect them from harm as a kind of hedge against the risk of systemic disorder that would be caused by their own predations. It was a good bet. And it was a good deal. It paid out in tens of trillions of dollars. And if you believe that what Wall Street does is evil, then Obama's service to Wall Street is evil, and there is nothing lesser about it. They vetted Obama. They vetted him thoroughly. And they did that before he even set foot in the U.S. Senate in 2004. He protected their interests there in the Senate. He helped shield corporations from class action suits. And he voted against caps on credit card interest. He was their guy back then. And some of us were saying so back then. He was the banker's guy in the Democratic primary race. Mm-hmm. Among the last three who were standing in 2008, it was Obama who opposed any kind of moratorium on home foreclosures. John Edwards was for a mandatory moratorium on housing foreclosures. Hillary Clinton, although it was a bullish position, she was for a voluntary moratorium. But Obama said no moratorium at all, not even a voluntary one. Let this run its course. That's what candidate Obama said. And of course, it has run its course through millions and millions of families. Only a few months after that, he's still a candidate, the crunch came and finance capital found itself in meltdown. So who stepped up to the rescue? Not George Bush. He tried, but he was spent. He was useless. He was not effective. Not John McCain. John McCain was in a coma. He was unglued, and he was totally ineffective. And so Bush's bailout failed on a Monday in October. By Friday, Obama had convinced enough Democrats who were in opposition to roll over, and the bailout passed. And that bailout set the stage for a new dispensation between the American state and Wall Street. It redefined the relationship between the American state and Wall Street, in which a permanent pipeline of tens of trillions of dollars would flow directly into Wall Street accounts via the Federal Reserve, which we all know is not an independent entity. Obama did all that, and he had not yet been elected. Obama put Social Security and Medicaid and all of the entitlements on the table in mid-January of 2009. The Republicans, if we remember, had suffered a resounding defeat. Nobody was around in a position to pressure Obama in January of 2009. But when the right was flat assed, you know, Obama stood up and spoke in their stead. There was no evil devil forcing Obama to put entitlements on the chopping block. It was him. He was the evil one. And it was not a lesser evil. He was a very effective evil, because the current age of austerity began on that day, in mid-January of 2009, when he said all entitlements are on the table and put Social Security there. And he had not yet been sworn in as president yet. So who is the effective evil? I haven't even gotten to what he did during his term as president, much less his expansion of the theaters of war and his unique assaults on international law and his massacre of due process of law in the United States. But I want to pause right here, because piling up facts about the most effective evils doesn't seem to do any good when the prevailing conversation isn't really about facts. It's all about intentions. Who intends to do what? Obama has good intentions. He intends to do the right thing, or at least he intends to do better than the Republicans intend to do. It's tensions, intentions, intentions. We need to be clear about this. There is no factual basis to believe that he intends to do anything other than the same things that he has already done. Whether Democrats are in charge of the Congress or not, that is, he will continue to serve Wall Street's most fundamental interests. And the whole idea of debating about Obama's intentions, which happens in every black barbershop and bar in the country every night, the whole idea of debating his intentions is ridiculous. It is psychobabble. It's not analysis. And no real left would engage in this kind of psychobabble. But I know we have an audience here that engages in analysis, so we'll proceed. I have no doubt that Newt Gingrich and the Republicans in general have worse intentions about the future of my people, black people, than Michelle Obama's husband does. I don't doubt that for a minute. but it doesn't matter because black people aren't going to roll over for whatever nightmarish apocalypse the sick mind of Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum or any of them would like to bring about in their wildest dreams. They have already, black people have already, however, rolled over for Obama's economic apocalypse in black America. And there's been very little resistance. And that is another way of saying that Obama has successfully blunted any retribution, any pushback by organized African America against the corporate powers that have devastated and destabilized black America in ways that have little precedence in modern times. Obama has protected those Wall Streeters from what should be the most righteous black wrath. And if nothing else, by doing that, he has crippled the chances for there being a progressive movement in the United States. Because by every calculation I have made over the last 40 years, black folks numerically make up half of what could be reasonably considered a progressive electorate in the United States. And when they are neutralized and silent, well, we got half of a very small group. So to take a riff from Shakespeare's Othello, Obama has done Wall Street some service, and they know it. He has been fantastically effective at supporting the supremely evil, and so don't you dare call him a lesser evil. He's a more effective evil. He's a more effective evil because black folks, historically the most progressive cohort in the United States, and liberals, and even lots of people who call themselves Marxists, let him get away with it. That is why he is so effective. People still insist on calling him a lesser evil while he drives a stake in the heart of due process. The reason that I have not spoken much about the second half of Obama's first term in office is because that's the period when the left generally becomes disgusted, and say they're disgusted, with what they call his excessive compromises and his cave-ins to Republicans. But that is a profoundly wrong reading of the reality, that he compromised and he caved in. He was simply continuing down his own road to austerity, the road that he himself had initiated before even taking office. The only person that was caving in and compromising to the Republicans was the Obama that many on the left had made up in their heads. That Obama never existed. And so it becomes even more ridiculous to psychoanalyze a non-existent person. The real Obama was the initiator of this austerity nightmare that we're living through, a nightmare that was scripted on Wall Street and which provided the core of Obama's policy team from the very beginning. He was working from their script with their people, and we could all see it. But we didn't act upon it. It didn't seem to make an impression on our brains that were full of the phony Obama. That's why Obama's so-called financial reform was so diligent in making sure that derivatives were virtually untouched. And Mike Taibbi wrote wonderful articles in the Rolling Stone to show that it was Obama's hand that was protecting derivatives. And now we have derivatives in the hundreds of trillions of dollars at roughly the same level that we had before the meltdown. We are structurally in the same situation with the same house of cards that is going to fall probably in much more catastrophic ways. The real Barack Obama retained Bush's Secretary of War, because the real Barack Obama was determined to repackage the imperial enterprise and to expand the scope and to expand the theaters of war. He would then dress up the war machine, dress it up head to foot in a chador of humanitarianism and march deeper and deeper into Africa. He'd make merciless and totally unprovoked war against Libya. And then he would tell Congress that there had been no war at all. What war? And also that it was none of their damn business. And he got away with that. Now that is the most effective evil warmonger imaginable. So don't call him a lesser evil. He is awesomely evil. Obama has advanced the corporatization of the public schools beyond George Bush's wildest dreams. He has methodically constructed a national parallel system of charter schools that in practice is undermining and subverting the traditional public schools. And in some places, they have replaced or are about to replace the traditional public schools. The hedge funds and the billionaires are ecstatic about that because they are helping facilitate that. And yet the teachers union endorses their own undertaker, foolishly believing that he is a lesser evil. So what does the left do in the election cycle? That's part of what this panel is supposed to address. The left, I say, should do what it is supposed to do here in the belly of the beast at all times, and that is to disarm the beast. That is our singular, unique duty, not to advise the beast, not to speak with the beast, but to disarm the beast. At this time in the world clock, that means ripping the farcical humanitarian veil from the face of U.S. war planning, and that is Obama's face. No genuine anti-war activist can endorse the actual warmonger, Obama. If you want to resist actual imperial wars, you must fight Obama, period. Anything else is to endorse or acquiesce in his wars. You can attend the United National Anti-War Coalition's conference that's in Stamford, Connecticut next weekend. And there you can meet a whole array of people from a whole bunch of organizations who have a whole calendar of activities that will extend past Election Day. If the question is, what do we do on an election year? You fight the war. You fight the powers that be. It's not like there's a election year standard time where you roll the clock forward or back. It's wartime. That's what time it is. You can join with UNAC in working to stop Obama from doing a repeat of Libya in Syria. You can say no to military action and embargoes against Syria and Iran. That's what you can do this election year. And if you can't say yes to that, then I don't have any advice for you at all, because the alternative is acquiescence in Obama's cynical duplicity. If the Green Party or any party firmly opposes Obama's humanitarian Orwellian farce, then support them. And I'm confident that they will. And we at Barr will support anyone who firmly opposes Obama and his wars. And if they don't, we were not going to lift a finger for them. Our colleague, Dr. Tony Montero, he advocates boycotting the major party presidential elections, which I guess means don't vote for Obama. And if you'd like to hear him explain that, he will at Black Agenda Report's panel, which is 5 o'clock in room W615. Obviously, I agree with Tony, but I'd call it not a boycott, but fight Obama and his imperial corporate policies policy. We have to fight Obama because he's not just the more effective evil, he is the actual evil that we have. fighting actual wars against actual victims all around the world and against us here at home. If you're going to fight for anything, you've got to fight for the right to fight. And that is in danger. The very right to struggle is in danger today. And that means fighting for the rule of law. So if you don't plan to go underground or go into exile anytime soon, you've got to fight this president, because he is the one who claims the right to imprison or kill any person of any nationality, any place, at any time on earth, for reasons that are known only to him. This man has excelled George Bush by shepherding preventive detention through Congress. Barack Obama is the more effective evil. We have to fight him during the election year and fight him again every year that he is here. Power to the people.
Must be together. peace go with your brother. Though I ain't so proud anymore, peace go with your brother. Recognition don't come cheap anymore. You my lawyer, you my doctor, yeah, but somehow you forgot about me. And now when I see you, all I can say is peace. Peace to your brother. Don't seem to matter much now, just what I say. Peace go with your brother. The kind of man who think he got to have his own way. You my father, you my uncle and my cousin and my son. But sometimes I wish you were none. Managed to smile and I say, peace go with your brother.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York, WBAI.org if you're streaming. And that, a lament of cosmetic but uncommitted negritude. of policies that have overthrown the most advanced state in Africa, in the north, Libya, where even as we speak now, the regime installed by the bombing and strategic satellite guidance and clandestine forces of the Obama administration overthrew the Libyan Arab Jamahiriya. And to this day, there are multiple camps of detention for Libyans of African hue in Tawarga and down in the southern Fezzan part of the nation. Ethnic cleansing is taking place under the new Transitional National Council. And overnight, the Obama administration came out and admitted that they are now going to engage in acknowledged support for the Contras of Syria. Not that they weren't doing so before through the agencies of the weapons stolen from Libya and sent through Turkey to Syria by the Al-Qaedoid allies of chaos the Obama administration is unleashing throughout Africa. What we heard was anti-Syriatum, the great Gil Scott-Heron, the late great Gil Scott-Heron, peace go with you, brother. And before that, that song about, and I go to my brother and I say, help me please, but my brother rise up, knocking me back, down on my knees. Oddly enough, that great Sam Cooke song was actually performed by someone once regarded as an authentic Negro, Wayne Brady. And before that, we heard spectacular exegesis of contemporary politics and paralysis of the left and the progressive movement in regard to the hands-off Obama lesser evil meme presented at the Left Forum by Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report. And now it's time for you to report with your reflections and observations. The phone number here on Earthwatch is area code 212-209.
No phone calls at this time. This is a rebroadcast program.
And here we go. You are on the air.
Robert, when I hear the Black Agenda Report saying Obama is not the lesser of two evils, Obama is evil, I can't help but wonder something very strange. It just comes into my head. I think... Now, this is going to sound a little odd, okay? I know this is going to make me sound...
I like odd.
I can't help but wonder if the Republicans can't get you one way, they'll get you another. I'm thinking of the voter ID card. I'm thinking of the Black Agenda Report getting paid. I'm thinking of the 2004 election where Reverend Al Sharpton lived lovely at the hands of Republicans feeding him information against Dean, Governor Dean, Howard Dean of Vermont. It's just something that I can't help but I can't get it out of my mind.
So you think a radical analysis against Obama is the sign of an agent?
I have my criticisms against Obama, Lord knows, but to say he is evil, don't vote for him.
Well, we must take that phrase in context, because the paradigm of the discussion was democracy, politics, and in quotes, the lesser of two evils. So please understand that context, and what Glenn Ford was saying was that the lesser of two... I mean, I would have said it differently. I would have said Obama is the... I would have said Obama...
You're beautiful, baby. You're beautiful.
Obama is the evil of two lessers.
Ah, you're beautiful. Oh, I just thought I'd lay it out there. And I'm
gonna I appreciate your caution, and we must be careful, but I certainly repudiate any thought that Glenn Ford, whom I've had the honor to host on 5 O'Clock Shadow and will again... I will not accept that his astute, factual, self-proving statement is the act of an agent.
Sir, remember when Al Sharpton got into trouble with the IRS after the election?
I'm wired up, can't tape no more. I'm wired up, can't tape no more. Yeah, I know about that.
And then his problems disappeared.
Well, but let us not attribute intentions to the factuality of the presentation.
Okay,
my
but
brother.
I'm saying anything is possible.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's plausible.
Is that plausible? All right.
But I love you for bracketing our analysis.
Maybe fall back, my brother. I love you.
I love you, man. See you next week. This is Earthwatch, and you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, come in, please.
Yes, you're on.
Okay. Why you just called him Obama, though?
Why'd I call who what?
Why you just called him Obama? Why you don't say the president? Even though he might be the lesser of two evil, why you don't call him the president?
Because I call the one in 1963 Kennedy, and I call the one after that Johnson. Johnson, yeah. Obama, they're both black terms.
Yeah, but you sound like a faggot. I want to kick your ass, boy.
You love me that much, huh? This is Earthwatch. You're on the air. Yeah, man. Yeah, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
You know, I'm just an ordinary person, and this year's election has me incredibly confused. I look at Mitt Romney, and I know that this man is not a president. He cannot take care of this country in any way, shape, or form just by the way he speaks. They used to make fun of George Bush. This man looks so stupid and compared to George Bush, I can't even say, maybe I'm wrong, but, and then I'm so disappointed in Obama, I can't tell you how hurt. I thought that this man was going to do things, and then when he started reading stories to children and chickpeas and all that, what kind of a president is that? I'm sorry, but so what do we do?
Here you go. How about this? Which do you prefer?
Pardon?
Which do you prefer for breakfast?
Oh, well,
wait. Let me pose the question, then you can answer. Do you prefer Kellogg's cornflakes or Post Toasties?
Ask me again, please.
Do you prefer Kellogg's cornflakes or Post Toasties?
I don't like either one.
Ah! Ding, 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 ding,
ding. I don't like either one. Tricks are for kids.
Good answer. I love that. So let's have a healthy breakfast for this election.
So then what do we do about this election? Do we boycott it?
Well, I will not vote for somebody who overthrew the leading nation of Africa.
I am very upset because we're fighting 3-4 wars, getting ready to fight a fifth. This is not right. And then also the nuclear system, the nuclear power plants and all that, with the sunfires coming.
And not to mention the offshore drilling that led to the BP ecocide of the Gulf, the fracking. You know, people are so gullible. They think Obama is opposing the XL pipeline. Hell no, it's just a procedural matter.
Oh my goodness, that Canada wants to dump their into our rivers and lakes.
I'm required to tell you, you can't say that on the air.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I just, everything is just insane.
Well, actually, this is safe harbor, but still, you know, okay.
Yes. Robert, I'm grateful for you. You give us so much information, and I thank you so much.
Well, you know, I thank you for standing by me because I took a scary step tonight.
I keep listening, and I keep trying to make a decision because I'm a citizen of this country. But I really am upset at all of our rights being taken from us.
I can tell that you are a woman who loves the rich heritage of African American history. And that you would stick your turtle head this far out of the shell is a beautiful thing. And I'm not going to try and give you any answer, because I know you'll find it yourself. And thank you for being so beautiful and calling.
Thank you very much, sir. God bless you and take care.
Love you, too.
Bye-bye.
This is Earthwatch. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello, Robert.
Greetings.
How are you? No, I just wanted to... I know you gave us an update on the situation in Libya, and I wanted to quickly give everyone an update that there has been, and there is in the country right now, a growing resistance movement to the NATO-installed government in this point.
The Cyrenaicans, the racist Cyrenaicans who were Al-Qaeda and all over Iraq and everywhere else, yeah.
Absolute, which is nothing more than just another form of absolute filth. It's unfortunate. But now this is just a sad time. But needless to say, these people today, just recently over the last 24 hours, the resistance in the country has been attacking them at the Sebha airport. And in fact, not only in this case, it was actually on some YouTube and on some of the African press channels. If you had kept up with it, I followed.
Well, sure. I was, on the bench for February. We had our fundraising drive, but some very important things were happening during that time. We'll continue to cover them on 5 o'clock Shadow and here.
If you keep up with it and everything else, there is a nationalist movement and a nationalist resistance in the country. So I'm saying that's something that has to be reported, underreported. Also, keep this in mind.
I'll take that as a mission. Thank you for the reminder.
One last thing. Just want to make sure to let everybody else know. Hey, the state BAI is still supported by that Qatari thing by still publicizing the Al Jazeera English network.
Well, yeah, I'm well aware of Qatar's role in the training and funding of the Libyan NATO CIA.
Yeah, I know that, but when the crisis broke out, that Al Jazeera network was front and center on this station promoting. Even on this station, promoting the lies about the situation.
I'm aware of that. I once on 5 o'clock Shadow raised that question with our executive director.
Oh no, I know you did. But I know about you, Robert. Robert, you're known. All right, it's been 20 years. I've known you for a long time, brother. So we know you. I'm understanding. I'm just saying, few people on that station just think that if you're carrying a sign and say down with this one and dictatorship and pro-democracy, that thing means automatically you're with the people. That's not what happened here. We know what half the filth the coup plotters are.
Call me next week, because I'm not a big fan of democracy either.
Go. Oh, thank you very much, brother.
Thank you.
Bye.
My smart brother, this is Earthwatch here on the air. Hello. Greetings. Okay, this is Earthwatch. You are on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hey.
Tom from the Bronx here.
Greetings.
Yes, I'd like to say that, who was that gentleman the night that was making the...
Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report.
Oh, but he's not a minister.
Well, preaching is simply telling the truth, and that can be done in many modes.
Right. Well, I want to say, it always comes down to what I've been saying, if you recall me calling from the past. And I always say that Bush and Cheney never left the White House. They are in there. They still have that input.
Well, you're right about that. And here's what happened. I don't know if you've been following the news the other day, but a former vice president had a cardio operation. And apparently they needed a donor. So they gave Richard Cheney Barack Obama's heart. This is Earthwatch. You're on the air. Hello? Speak. Are you there? This is Earthwatch. You are on the air.
Oh, let me turn my radio off.
Hey, okay.
Oh, you know what?
Did you like that?
Hello?
Did you like that? I said Cheney got a transplant. He took Obama's heart.
Oh, yes. That figure's real nice there. But what I really wanted to say was that there is a 1,115,786 of us in the United States, and none of us voted for Obama.
My girl.
That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, I love you. That was brilliant. That was brilliant. You know what my signature on my emails is? I got tired of saying we are the 99%.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and looked up the population of the United States of America.
Uh-huh.
And I mathematically inverted that number.
Uh-huh.
Then multiplied by 100 in order to make it a percent.
Right.
And so now, my signature, I don't want to claim more than I can claim.
Mm-hmm.
So my signature now says, I mm-hmm. am the 3.24 times 10 to the minus 7th percent.
Okay.
That's not just that one person in America. all that means, one person in America. And it turns out to be the fraction 3 times 10 to the minus 7th. And I being in my profession, we're tempted to ego and aggrandizement, but I wanted to not embiggen, but ensmallen my claim to the percentage of the 99.
That's good. That is really good. So, anyway,
truth
I always like your shows, though. I always like them.
Well, I hope they're fun sometimes.
Later, not being a kid to listen to the radio.
You are my world. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. This is Earthwatch, and you're on the air. Hello. Hi. Robert Knight here, WBAI 99.5, WBAI.org, streaming.
Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Thank you for your courage. I totally agreed in every way, first of all, with the great Gil Scott. People were not understanding how brave he is. And that man that cussed you out and said those inappropriate things.
You know, I got a date with him later. No, I'm just playing.
Oh, he just didn't know. I never get upset when people don't know. Because when what he said was not relevant. How he could protect someone simply because they look. How could you like someone because of their color? And for one thing, I don't think Obama's son would look like.
Well, it might. It's wrong to like only some because of their color. But you make me think that it's better to love everybody because of their colors.
Why do you like someone because of their color? I mean, really? To me,
well, some of us are new to this earth.
Why would you just want one color?
Some of us are new to this earth. And all we know is the nearby teats, and we're not yet, urbanized enough to recognize the beauty of other colors.
And you know what I was going to ask you? Are we ever going to get to these unbelievably backward, retarded McConnell and all these unbelievably brainless? They said in the USA Today they were talking about little children discussing politics. And one fellow said, well, Obama got somebody else's heart. Not Obama. Cheney got someone else's heart.
Yeah, and I'm the one who said he got Obama's heart.
The other little kid said, who's going to give another brain to the vice president?
Woo!
I thought you would like that.
I do. Thank you so much for calling. You brighten the night. This is Earthwatch, and you are on the air. Hello.
Yes, I just like to add, if Cheney got Obama's heart, I would think he would think better. He would be better than Cheney. And he would be better than... he would be much better. Being with Obama's heart, because Obama isn't himself. With Cheney and Bush around. He's not himself. He would be a much better president.
He's the goddamn president of the United States of America.
He's not permitted to because he's...
We did not vote for us. We did not vote for a second-class presidency after going through all the back of the bus.
According to Bush and Cheney, we did. According to Bush and Cheney, we absolutely did.
Hello? What you mean we, paleface?
Huh? Well, meaning that the people that voted for him, it's unfortunate to say that, but you put Obama in there, it's like having Bush and Cheney in there still.
Well,
they never left. They
actually,
never left.
Obama's policies have been like Bush and Cheney with a tan. This is Earthwatch, and you're on the air. Hello.
Calling in?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. How you doing, sir?
Well, glad to hear you. How you doing? What's on your mind?
This is a very good show. Is it Robert Knight, right?
Yes, sir. Pardon me. My name is Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. You're tuned to WBAI 99.5.
Okay. Yeah, I think that it's just a shame that people didn't do a proper investigation of Mr. Obama. That they would have known what he was about. You know, unfortunately, people who knew, who were, you know, in academia or political analysts, and even amongst the grassroots, they could have did a better job on analyzing.
Well, there was a communal trance, and I was part of it. I'll confess that I was part of it.
I mean, the December 12th movement in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of this group even supported Obama.
Get out.
Yeah. Do you remember the great black debate in Harlem that happened after Obama was elected? We had people on WBAI who were supporters of Obama. Ron
you know,
Daniels.
All I can say is your people. You got that right.
I first ran into Obama first, and you know, on my own in 2003.
Yeah.
Just happened to run into a newspaper that used to be published.
I was in Boston. I covered him during his coming out party at the Democratic Party convention.
Okay.
I should have known better, as the Beatles did sing. But it's just another thing. And I say,
I remember he had made about
me
nuke
hope.
In Pakistan and Iran.
No,
and I was like, who is this strange Negro?
Well, listen, we got to get out of here. Time's up.
Okay,
call me back. You've all been brilliant. Please call back next week. We're going to have more to think and say and do next week. So, thanks for calling. This is Earthwatch. And to paraphrase the great Robert Zimmerman, no relation.
But don't think twice, it's all right.
Don't vote twice. That concludes this wonderful edition of Earth Watch. Be back next week.
Ain't no use in the turning on your light, babe. The light I never knowed. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. I'm on the dark side of the road. But I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway. But don't think twice, it's all right.
Don't vote twice. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund coming up at the bottom of the hour. Send me an email, rknight@wbai.org.
Calling out my name, gal, like you never done before. And it ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, I can't hear you anymore. I'm a-thinking and a-wondering, walking down the road. I once loved a woman, a child, I am told. I give her my heart, but she wanted my soul. But don't think twice, it's all right. So long, honey, baby. Where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, baby. So I just say, fare thee well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time. But don't think twice, it's all right.
that can't be done. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time. It's easy.
I still believe all you need is love, you know, but I don't believe that just saying it is going to do it, you know. I mean, I still believe in the fact that love is what we all need.
And it was for love. It was for love and bloody peace again, you know. It was a fabulous time.
You say you will love me if I have to go. You'll be thinking of me. Somehow I will know. Someday when I'm lonely, wishing you weren't so far away, then I will remember things we said today. You say you'll be mine, girl, till the end of time. Such a kind girl seems so hard to find. Someday when we're dreaming deep in love, not a lot to say, then we will remember things we said today. Me, I'm just the lucky kind, love to hear you say that love is love. And though we may be blind, love is here to stay, and that's enough to make you mine, girl. Be the only one. Love me all the time, girl. We'll go on and on. Someday when we're dreaming deep in love, not a lot to say, then we will remember things we said today. Me, I'm just the lucky kind, love to hear you say that love is love. Though we may be blind, love is here to stay, and that's
enough to make you mine, girl. Be the only one. Love me all the time, girl. We'll go on and on. Someday when we're dreaming, deep in love, not a lot to say, then we will remember things we said today.
This has been a commemorative broadcast of Earthwatch featuring the late Robert Knight.
And that program was brought to you on recording and produced for WBAI by Catherine Davis. This is WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. I find some of these materials to be utterly fascinating, a picture not just of the time, but last week's program was older, this week's program was not that long ago. And following Robert's progression through all his years as a philosopher and thinker and radio host, maybe make some of these broadcasts thoroughly fascinating. So thank you for putting these together, Kathy Davis. And now, a little howling. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name's Jim Freund. This week, our guest, recorded last week, is John Allen Simon, writer and director of the movie Radio Free Albemuth, and we'll be talking a lot about translations of Philip K. Dick to cinema and stage. Stay tuned. Oh, and a review of the movie Snowpiercer, review by Dan Persons. Thank you.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Jim Freund said to me, "It's okay, Dan. You don't have to see Transformers Age of Extinction," for which I was no end of happy because I'm nothing if not committed to my obligations as a film critic. But why put myself in the path of a whirring, clanking 10-ton pile of manure if I don't really have to? So I promptly said, "Thank you," and got myself over to Snowpiercer, a new film by Korean director Bong Joon-ho that's catching quite a bit of attention for mostly good reason, but therein hangs a tale. The twists start almost immediately. Instead of humankind messing up the Earth with our environmentally wasteful ways, Snowpiercer's big disaster comes when we try to fix things. Doesn't work too well, a deadly freeze settles over the Earth, and 17 years later, the remnants of humanity have all gathered onto a mile-long train, traveling the globe on a circuitous track. As befits rail travel, the passengers are broken up into classes. The more entitled get hot tubs, private suites, and sushi. The bargain riders are herded into stinking, windowless sleeper cars and are fed a disgusting black power sludge. In other words, still better than Spirit Airlines. Thank you. I'm here all week. Tip your waitresses. There have been previous attempts by the rear-dwelling underclasses to overthrow the abusive first-class passengers in the front cars, but all have failed. Snowpiercer is the story of the latest revolt, led by the charismatic Curtis, played by Chris Evans, and aided and abetted by, among others, an exiled member of the ruling elite, played by John Hurt, and a drug-addicted security specialist and his daughter, played by Bong Joon-ho regulars Song Kang-ho and Ko Ah-sung, respectively. And if you wanted to come up with a narrative mechanism for ushering your characters from one delirious set piece to the next, you couldn't do much better than a near-infinite alignment of railway cars, with each doorway opening onto a new environment and a new kind of obstacle to overcome. Joon-ho takes the risky step of keeping his sets narrow while being unrestrained in their design and uninhibited in their social satire. There's a primary colored classroom where children gleefully insult their less privileged traveling companions, a blacklight illuminated rave slash orgy, a high-class drug den, and on and on. The impression is paradoxically claustrophobic and expansive, a way of constraining everyone, including the filmmaker, into the narrative, while suggesting that anything is possible. The problem is that Joon-ho doesn't seem to be sure about how much recklessness he wants to embrace. The pacing is uneven, with set pieces occasionally overstaying their welcome, and with the narrative occasionally faltering as characters wax philosophical or engage in extended exchanges that could have conveyed the same information and emotional impact in a line or two. At one point, a timer is set for 7 minutes as a member of the ruling class lectures the plebs about the importance of knowing their place in the social strata. And even though the lecturer is Tilda Swinton, playing perhaps the most eccentric rendition of heedless elitism ever captured on screen, and even though the actual running time of the speech is probably not 7 minutes, I know about screen time. It feels like it. And even with a film that clocks in at 2 hours and 5 minutes, that's a long time for speechifying when there's revolution in to get to. I do respect Bong Joon-ho for wanting to work deeper textures into his scenario. And for all that that has led to narrative speed bumps, they're at least cleverly realized speed bumps, which eases a good deal of the frustration. There is another reason for setting a story on a train beside the inherent claustrophobia, and that's how the setting serves as a natural metaphor for propelling a narrative forward. Snowpiercer should have respected that aspect more, but for all of that, it's still a tasty bit of speculative action. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at Cinefantastique Online. Catch up on what you missed by going to CFQonline.com.
Thank you, Dan. This is annoying because it sounds like a movie I would really like to see, Snowpiercer, except for one thing that was especially brought forth in David Denby's review in The New Yorker and some other notes. The film is gory. The film has what I call gornography, something we're also going to discuss on the interview that you are about to hear. And that means I just won't be seeing it. And that's a shame, because that prevents me from seeing cinema that I would really like. Don't do that, people. Don't do that. There is no, what doesn't advance your story. Now, I do understand that particularly in Korean film, there is a movement of brilliant, great movie making that invokes a good deal of gore. And this is the fellow who made the movie The Host and Mother. I just can't abide it. It's not entertainment to me if it's going to keep me freaking out all night for years to come. Anyway, all that aside, again, good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. I am Jim Freund. Movie adaptations of Philip K. Dick are plentiful. They're not about to stop either. They're going to keep coming at us. And with the exception of a very, very few, even though some are entertaining, very few of them have anything to do with Philip K. Dick. I got an email from Ken Gale of WBAI saying somebody was asking him, do I consider The Matrix being a Philip K. Dick-esque movie? No, not at all. It's a William Gibson-esque movie. And even then, by the way, talk about movies that lose their way. Right after the scene with the Delphi, you can give up on the entire trilogy. It's useless. It's pointless. And this kind of thing happens to Dick all the time. Many of the films that are made are based on short stories. Take a, 12-page short story, Minority Report, The Minority Report, and turn it into a 2.5-hour Spielberg Minority Report. Take a 9-page story, We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, and you end up with the, I think it's over 2 hours, it certainly feels like it's over 2 hours, Total Recall. Short stories are often the best inspiration for full-length movies because you can get all the nuance. When you're doing a movie, the question is, how much can you cut out? And how faithful are you going to be to the writer? Well, there have been very, very, very few movies that have been in any way, shape, or form faithful to Philip K. Dick. Of course, the first major one, not counting the I think it was a Twilight Zone, The Electric Ant, that started it all. And then jump ahead to 1982, Blade Runner. Blade Runner has virtually nothing to do with the short story Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which has two protagonists, one of which is the toy maker, which is relegated to a relatively small role. And much of the point of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep is about mercerism. It's about religion. It's about the religion in the story. And how does that relate to human beings versus what goes on with the replicants, blah, 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 blah. Okay, creators, and all that. None of that is in the movie. I think it's a gorgeous movie. I've had this argument on the air many, many times. But I don't think that the movie is representative of the work of Philip K. Dick. So moving ahead, after that, Total Recall, there is a great moment, 5 minutes.